Brett Ciancia with us. Pick Six Previews. And Brett is in the middle of his studies, going league to league, looking at teams, doing interviews, taking copious notes. Brett, where have you been the last few days?
Hey, good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me on. I'm rotating between the Pac-12 and the ACC right now, going through team by team. I think since we last talked, I added Colorado, Stanford, two coaching changes that sound a lot different, approaches by the new head coaches. The Arizona schools I looked at in depth, Arizona State, and then back over to the ACC for some UNC. Boston College was in there. Who else do we have? Virginia Tech. So a lot going on. It's random right now, but just wherever I can find some info and get started.
Colorado, they were 1-11, just miserable as a football team and a program. And Rick George, who's a longtime friend of mine, goes out, thinks outside the box, hires Coach Prime, which I think is a good hire. Even if someday it's proven to be a failure, I think it's a really good hire. We know he's going to get players. How long is it going to take, though? Because I think, I was talking to Brad Powers about this last few weeks, I think in the beginning, they're probably going to be a little overhyped because of the hype machine that's going on with it.
Yeah, I agree. I was on SiriusXM, their Pac-12 channel, about a month ago, and they were asking me about Colorado's expectations. They were talking, do you think they'll hit 9 wins and stuff like this? And I said, no way. I mean, I would put their over-under next year maybe 4.5 wins. I mean, make a bowl would be incredible in year one. Now, it's different from the point. There's two different things going on here. Number one, it's just such a big rebuild coming off of 1-11. And not just the record, but they were the worst-rated Power 5 team that I've looked at since 2014, since Kansas went winless back then. So, yeah, it was an awful season. You're also going through a massive roster overhaul, bigger even than USC last year. This is 45 players he signed in 45 days, whether it be transfer players, high schoolers, 2024 commits. So, huge roster overhaul. So I don't think it'll happen overnight. But I think the point of the hire by Rick George, it was really to make a splash overnight, really to put Colorado back on the map. This is a program that was strong, really strong in the 70s, 80s, 90s, even part of the 2000s. You know, they were part of the college football landscape, and the last 20 years, that has fallen off. I was shocked to hear this. They've only made a bowl twice in the last 17 seasons, just the same amount as Kansas. So, yeah, they needed an instant jolt to put them back on the map, and that this accomplished that. I mean, right away, Colorado now number one transfer class in the country in 2023. So Deion's a proven recruiter. We saw what he did with Travis Hunter, bringing in a five-star player to not just the non-AQ, but the FCS level, unprecedented. So he's making an immediate splash. It'll be a year or two before the wins and losses follow, but it's on pace.
Those Bill McCartney teams of the late 80s, early 90s, the 1990 team split the national championship with Georgia Tech, which is very ironic because Georgia Tech football has been in the tank, as we know. But they were loaded. That Colorado team, the opening game that year was Tennessee-Colorado. Tennessee's team was loaded with NFL talent as well, and they lost two and tied two. They underachieved big time. But, yeah, and they recruited California, Brett. They went into California. They'd get into Texas some. They'd get in the Midwest. And I don't know if they can return to that level, but that was a remarkable ascension watching that a little over 30 years ago. And back to what we were just talking about, he's going to get players. I mean, players that would never consider Colorado today are mentioning them now.
Oh, absolutely. You look at Colorado's recruiting profile the last 10 years, last 5 years, bottom of the barrel. I mean, one of the worst Power 5 recruiters out there. Right. Part of it's geography. Part of it's their lack of winning success recently. Part of it's kind of that identity crisis moving from the Big 12 to the Pac-12. But no, I mean, yeah, you saw that recruiting overnight. We mentioned he got Travis Hunter again. He signed him first at Jackson State. But then, of course, got him here to transfer to Colorado. Got his son, who was one of the top passers in FCS. And when you look at it, it's not just quantity, it's quality when you look at his transfer class. So they're back on the map. It might take a year or two to get into bowl season, but I think that if the goal was to put them, you know, get eyeballs on the program again, they're back. And I like the coordinator hires. You bring in Sean Lewis from Kent State. He was the head coach at Kent State. Has him coming in as the offensive coordinator, bringing his offensive line guy with him, O'Boyle. It's a fast offense. You can see the output they have, really, really strong at running the ball, too. He calls it flash fast, the golden flashes at Kent State. But, this is one of the most intriguing springs and off seasons I've looked at. So I can't wait to see their spring game.
Any teams that you've studied to date look like they can make a significant move of some sort?
Well, right there with Colorado, I mean, I think they're going to improve on that one win. I think they'll be in that 4 or 5 win range, so plus 4 there. Arizona, if they can fix their defense. I think the last year, what Jed Fish did at Arizona, which was so great, was that he really overhauled the entire offense. And overnight, that thing clicked. He brought in Jaden Delora from Washington State, Jacob Cowing from UTEP, and this thing took off. So, but it was really focused to just one side of the ball. It was one of the best offenses in the country. People might laugh at that, but Arizona's offense was incredible last year. Defense was one of the worst. So if he can, make a similar turnaround on defense, then this becomes more of a complete team. They'll be back in bowl season. Same deal with UNC. I just started studying UNC last night. They bring a lot back on offense, namely Drake May, the freshman All-American quarterback, going to be a Heisman contender this year again. Bring back their running backs, their tight ends, 3 starting linemen. A couple of receivers are gone. They have to replace Josh Downs and Antoine Green, but they hit the transfer portal really well, bringing in Nate McCollum, the slot receiver from Georgia Tech, and an FCS All-American on the outside. So that offense should be humming again, even with Phil Longo heading to Wisconsin, like Chip Lindsey, the new coordinator. So long story short, if they can get their defense up to par, just like Arizona, these are teams that are very offense-only. So we'll see if they can fix that defense a little bit at UNC. If so, they become a there you go. I almost said Coastal again. There's no more Coastal. I'm getting nostalgic here. They become an ACC title contender yet again.
I was looking where, and I don't remember, maybe it was Cade Klubnik, but it was Clemson, and they were talking about their new coordinator, Coach Riley, Lincoln Riley's brother, and he said their offense is going to look like what Josh Heupel does. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. I love the hire. I didn't read much about Clemson yet, but I do remember seeing that hire come through. Cade Klubnik, interesting parallels to what Deshaun Watson did when he was brought in as a young guy to relieve the starter Cole Stout back in 2014. And then same deal with Trevor Lawrence coming in as a freshman, relieving Kelly Bryant. And you saw the same deal happen this year. A freshman, Cade Klubnik, 5-star prospect, comes in for DJU. And leads that ACC title comeback. Also led the Syracuse comeback. People forget that. This season would have looked a lot different if Syracuse held on. They were up 21-7 on Clemson late in the game. So DJU led. Klubnik led 2 big comebacks and kind of changed the course of the quarterback room for them going forward. I want to see him put on some strength. I watched that bowl game and he looked a step too slow against Tennessee. And maybe credit Tennessee's defense for flying all over the field on him. But, we'll see. I'm encouraged to see what he looks like in his second full season.
There was a list that Josh up in Picktown, Ohio, posted. That's the 24/7 list. And it was the top 10 coaches currently. Now, obviously, this is not historic, but these are current coaches. They've got Nick Saban number – where do they have him? They have Nick – actually, on this one, they have him number 2. On another one, they had him number 6. They have Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, Harbaugh 3, Dabo Swinney 4, Brian Kelly 5, Ryan Day 6, Lincoln Riley, Kyle Whittingham, Luke Fickle, and Josh Heupel. They got Heupel number 10. Where in there would you differ?
Oh, wow, it's such a hard deal because if you look at his whole, look at coaches' whole careers. If you look at their 2022 right. season specifically, do you weight it differently? Do you weight it towards what they're building for the future? It's a tough one. I mean, you have to start with Nick Saban. In any category, any quantity, it's got to be Saban 1. I'd go Kirby 2. I mean, I think the way that Kirby's building Georgia up. It looks like a mini Alabama, and it's not even mini anymore. It is Alabama now. I mean, they have the high school pipeline there in Georgia, the back-to-back national titles, undefeated national titles. It's those are 1A, 1B. From there, yeah, with Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day, I want to see them build their defenses up a little bit. I know they're offensive geniuses, but their defenses have held them back from playoffs and national titles, so they'd be close there. I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but is Kyle Whittingham on that top 10? Because he certainly deserves it after what he's built at Utah.
Number 8, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. A lot of times you see a guy like that overlooked. Similar vein, Kirk Ferentz. I don't know if you go top 10, but he's got to be close the way that he's built consistency, built elite defenses at Iowa, giving them a shot, and a couple Big Ten West titles. So, no, I think you pretty much hit it with that list. I think Bruce Feldman is the list you're talking about, too. He puts one out every year. Guy that caught my eye was Lance Leipold of Kansas, checked in at number 9 on Feldman's list. And, you know, if you can turn around Kansas into a bowl season, a bowl team, that's certainly worthy. So, yeah, always an interesting offseason discussion.
I know Alabama fans don't like hearing this, but Georgia is, in its current form, a better version of Alabama. Now, a better version of current Alabama, let's say.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the margin might be razor thin, but I mean,
sure.
Look at what Georgia's pulled off on defense. NFL record for defenders drafted last cycle, and then they come back and they're almost as strong on defense again. It's just a very complete, balanced program right now. And if you focus on just one side of the ball, their other side is just as strong. I mean, people forget that Georgia's offense was one of the best in the country. I'm curious to see what they do after Stetson Bennett. But then you could argue back with me saying, hey, that was a walk-on. Now, he was a very special, incredible walk-on, but imagine Georgia with a room of 3 5-star quarterbacks battling this spring. So, I think that Georgia is on a different tier right now, and they have they have the recruiting and geography background that we talked about.
Hawkeye Jason points this out. It's a tweet. Matt Rule at Nebraska, his first year when he was back at Temple in Philadelphia, in 13, they went 2-10. His last 2 years in 15 and 16, they won 10 games. First year at Baylor went 1-11. Last year in 19, 11 wins, played in the Big 12 title and a New Year's Six Bowl. And he points out Nebraska just won 4 games. Is it possible? And obviously Nebraska has much more tradition than those teams, Baylor, Temple, than we mentioned, but they're about 20 years removed from that tradition. Can he flip it in year 2 or 3? That significantly.
I think in year 2 or year 3, everything's on the table for Matt Rule. It tends to take that long. He installs his culture. He's a big culture guy, big process guy, daily grinder. It's all the stuff that Trev Alberts, our athletic director, was looking for in the hire. So he's proven it at multiple stops in the college level. Now, one thing to, you know, a wild card for optimism for Nebraska fans, those two examples didn't have the transfer portal. They didn't have all the NIL advantages that Nebraska has. They didn't have the sellout streak, the fan base, which people may laugh at. But to recruits, they want to play in front of a rabid fan base. They want to play in front of a full stadium. That's why you see a lot of guys leaving the L.A. footprint. So long story short, it could happen in 2 and 3 years. It could be accelerated now with the transfer portal. And I haven't dug into their roster yet to see what they have coming back, but I assume that they have a pretty solid base of players. It's just about development there. That's what's been lacking in Nebraska is player development. They got to start because they sign top 25 classes every year. It's just that they don't retain them. They don't develop them as much as you like to see. So, and that's where he's great at.
Brett, tell everybody how they can get your content.
Yeah, thanks. It's at Pick Six Previews on Twitter, picksixpreviews.com. Annual season preview book coming out this July. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Appreciate it, man. See you next week.
All right, see ya.
There he is. Brett Cianci at Pick Six Previews. Blake Ruffino, top of hour two. Trev Alberts, AD at Nebraska. What happened? I'm trying to remember. Early on college football ESPN coverage.